Strong. And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
An American professor is facing criticism after suggesting that Korean women kept as sex slaves in wartime Japan willingly took part in sex work. Harvard University professor J. Mark Ramseer made the claims in a recently published paper. His arguments reject a wide body of research finding that so-called comfort women in Japan were forced to work as sex workers during World War II. Historians say tens of thousands of women from around Asia, many of them Korean, were sent to military brothels to provide sex to Japanese soldiers during the war. In the 1990s, women began speaking publicly about how they had been taken to comfort stations and forced to provide sexual services. They have shared their experiences of rape and abuse. Ramseer, however, argues that the women willingly entered into contracts as sex workers. His paper has intensified a political dispute between Japan and South Korea. South Korean leaders have long urged Japan to offer apologies and damages to the victims of sex slavery. Both North and South Korea have spoken out against Ramseer's paper. Hundreds of scholars have signed letters condemning the paper, which was published online in December. The paper was supposed to appear in the March issue of the International Review of Law and Economics, but the publication suspended the issue and released an expression of concern, saying the piece is under investigation. Ramseer is a professor of Japanese legal studies at Harvard Law School. He did not provide comments to Associated Press reporters. Historians have raised major concerns about Ramseer's research. Scholars at Harvard and other universities have examined his sources and say there is no historical evidence of the sex worker contracts he describes. Harvard historians Andrew Gordon and Carter Eckert have called for the article to be withdrawn. We do not see how Ramseer can make credible claims about contracts he has not read, the two said in a statement. Alexis Dudden is a historian of modern Japan and Korea at the University of Connecticut. She said the article ignores many years of research. Although some have pointed to freedom of scholarship to defend Ramseer, Dudden argued that the article does not meet the requirements of academic integrity. She added, "It's very clear from his writing and his sources that he has never seen a contract." More than 1,000 economists have signed a letter condemning the paper. The letter said the article misuses economic theory as a cover to legitimize horrific atrocities. A separate group of historians on Japan issued a 30-page paper calling for the article to be withdrawn. At Harvard, hundreds of students signed a letter demanding that Ramseer apologize and calling on the university to answer the accusations against him. A United Nations report from 1996 found that comfort women serving as sex slaves were taken through violence and coercion. A statement from Japan in 1993 admitted that women were taken against their own will, although the nation's leaders later denied it. In South Korea, activists denounced Ramseer and called for his resignation. Chung Young-ae, South Korea's Minister of Gender Equality and Family, criticized the paper last week. She called it an attempt to distort the facts about the Japanese military's comfort women. I'm Brian Lin.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. In many parts of the world, cold weather may mean one kind of vegetable is on your table. Root vegetables. Root vegetables are plant roots. You must dig them up to eat them. Common root vegetables are the beet, parsnip, turnip, carrot, members of the onion family, garlic, celery root, turmeric, radish, including daikon and horseradish, and ginger. Root vegetables such as potatoes and yams are also members of the tuber family of vegetables. Some root vegetables, such as carrots, turnips, and beets, get sweeter once the weather first gets freezing cold. The cold causes the roots to work hard to prevent the plants from freezing. This causes the natural starches to turn into sugar. And sugar is the most important ingredient for a process called caramelization. Meredith Massey is a mother of two teenagers in the state of Maryland, near Washington, D.C. She explains caramelization better than any dictionary could.
It gets that caramelized bits if you roast them well. It doesn't burn, but it just browns and is a little bit crispy and a little bit sweet. Delicious.
Cooking in a hot oven is one of the easiest ways to enjoy root vegetables. Wash and remove the skin if needed. Put olive oil, salt, and pepper on them, and then roast them in the oven at about 204 degrees Celsius. Another simple way to cook root vegetables is to boil them. They are perfect to add to soups. But most take longer to cook than some other ingredients, so you might want to add them first. Massey shares with us her simple way of preparing beet and carrot soup.
So I like to do a really simple dish with beets. It's beet greens, and carrots. So you chop the beets up into little cubes, and then you chop up the beet greens from the top of the beets, and then you chop up some carrots into little circles, and you put them all into a pot with a little bit of water, and you bring that to a boil until the carrots and the beets are soft, but not too soft, and then you add a very small amount of butter. Somehow that little bit of butter makes the whole dish taste very buttery and delicious.
Jim Shepherd is a lawyer and father of three children in California. He shares his favorite way of cooking carrots. He begins by removing the skin from the carrots and then cutting them into thin sticks. He says to use the freshest carrots you can find.
And you've got on the stove a saucepan with water and some butter, maybe a little salt and pepper. And so you've got a nice hot water to put your carrots in. And you might want to shave some fresh ginger, maybe some orange zest into the water, and just let them gently cook for however long it takes for them to become slightly tender. In Italian cooking, you call it al dente, probably.
He says not only are the carrots delicious, but so is the water. It has carrot flavor and anything else you chose to add. Shepherd serves it as a soup or uses it as a cooking liquid for other recipes. A recipe tells you how to cook a dish, and the ingredients are the separate items in a recipe.
And it's just a wonderfully simple, yet very powerful dish, in my opinion. I keep returning to it over and over again, partly because of its simplicity, but it's also a flexible recipe in that you can put the ginger in, like I said, an orange zest, but you could also try some mushroom in it. You could put herbs in it, or again, just straight up butter, salt, pepper, just delicious.
Jen Johnson is a lawyer in Tacoma Park, Maryland. She prefers golden beets instead of the red ones. She roasts them whole for about 45 minutes, depending on the size of the beets. She lets them cool, takes the skin off, and then slices them with goat cheese. She says with golden beets, her kitchen looks less like a crime scene. Beet juice is very dark red. Sarah Rosner has not been so lucky. She is a mixologist in Washington, D.C.
Because there is beet juice everywhere. It is like a crime scene in my kitchen. I cannot stop cleaning up beet juice everywhere.
Rosner is well known in the mixologist world for her alcoholic drinks. She uses surprising ingredients like beet juice. She says you can easily leave out the alcohol for this drink. She starts with beet juice that you can either buy or make yourself.
And gin works really well with beets, 100%. That goes really well. Ginger also works really well with that. Some lemon. I use raw honey and bee pollen. You get some more of those earthy, beet, rich flavors and a little sweetness, and some jasmine flowers if you want to go, you know, really far. But yeah, definitely just lemon and ginger will work just fine.
Roasting in the oven and boiling on the stove are both popular ways to cook root vegetables. You can also braise them. Braising means to cook in fat and then in a little liquid. Or you can grill them over an open fire or gas grill. Since root vegetables grow underground, they take in many nutrients from the soil. This makes them high in nutrients. Growing underground also gives them their special flavor that is described by most people as earthy.
It brings so many memories and feelings, and, you know, it's earthy, it's natural, it's, you know, you get the grass, the dirt, it's all those things, and I love that connection.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look at the presidential election campaign of 1952. President Harry Truman decided not to seek re-election. The continuing war in Korea and economic problems at home had cost him the support of many Americans. His Democratic Party needed a new candidate for president. In the spring of 1952, Harry Truman offered his support to Adlai Stevenson. Stevenson, however, said he was not interested in any job except the one he had as governor of Illinois. Someone asked what he would do if the Democratic Party chose him anyway as its presidential candidate. Stevenson jokingly answered that he would have to shoot himself. So President Truman and other party leaders discussed different candidates. Each one, however, seemed to have some political weakness. The Republican Party was also discussing possible candidates. It was much easier for the Republicans to choose. Earlier, General Dwight Eisenhower had said he would be interested in running for president. Eisenhower was the highly respected commander of Allied forces in Europe during World War II. Many members of both parties supported Ike, as he was popularly known. Eisenhower agreed to campaign as a Republican. His closest competitor for the Republican nomination was Robert Taft. Taft was a senator from Ohio and the son of a former president, William Howard Taft. Senator Taft had strong support among Republicans for his conservative positions. But he did not receive enough votes at the party's national convention to defeat Eisenhower for the nomination. In his acceptance speech, Eisenhower told the delegates,
"Ladies and gentlemen, you have summoned me on behalf of millions of your fellow Americans to lead a great crusade for freedom in America and freedom in the world. I know something of the solemn responsibility of leading a crusade. I take up this task, therefore, in a spirit of deep obligation, mindful of its burdens and of its decisive importance. I accept your summons. I will lead this crusade."
Eisenhower chose Senator Richard Nixon of California as his running mate for vice president. Nixon was known for strongly opposing communism.
"I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States."
Earlier, as a member of the House of Representatives, Richard Nixon had led the investigation of a former State Department official, Alger Hiss. Hiss was accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusation and was never charged with spying. But he was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury and was sentenced to prison. Democrats opened their presidential nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois, 10 days after the Republicans closed theirs in the same city. Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson welcomed the delegates, but still seemed like he did not want to run for president. That only made the delegates want him even more. They were unable to choose a nominee on the first two votes. Then, on the third vote, a majority of the delegates chose Adlai Stevenson, and he accepted. He urged Democrats to campaign with honor.
Let's talk sense to the American people. Let's tell them the truth, that there are no gains without pains, that we are now on the eve of great decisions, not easy decisions, like resistance when you're attacked, but a long, patient, costly struggle which alone can assure triumph over the great enemies of man. War, poverty, and tyranny, and the assaults upon human dignity, which are the most grievous consequences of each.
A political observer described the differences between Adlai Stevenson and Dwight Eisenhower this way. Stevenson was a man of thought. Eisenhower was a man of action. The Republican Party hired an advertising agency to design a campaign to sell Eisenhower and Nixon to the American public.
The man from Abilene, out of the heartland of America, out of this small frame house in Abilene, Kansas, came a man, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Through the crucial hour of historic D-Day, he brought us to the triumphant peace of VE Day. Now another crucial hour in our history. The big question.
General, if war comes, is this country really ready?
It is not. We haven't enough tanks for the fighting in Korea. It is time for a change.
The nation, haunted by the stalemate in Korea, looks to Eisenhower. Eisenhower knows how to deal with the Russians. He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower.
Adlai Stevenson was known as an intellectual, an egghead. He dismissed some traditional political advisors and replaced them with fellow eggheads when he launched his campaign. The biggest issue in the 1952 campaign was communism. Stevenson said America needed to guard against it. Yet, he repeatedly criticized the actions of Senator Joseph McCarthy. For years, the senator from Wisconsin had been denouncing government officials and others as communists. Eisenhower did not criticize McCarthy. Even when the senator accused Eisenhower's good friend and fellow World War II hero, General George Marshall, of being a traitor. The Republican campaign went smoothly until Nixon faced a campaign finance dispute. The vice presidential candidate was under pressure to withdraw. That led to Nixon's famous Checkers speech. He made the speech on national television on September 23, 1952. In it, he denied any wrongdoing. He defended his actions regarding the disputed funds and his decision to keep a special gift from a political supporter.
One other thing I probably should tell you, because if I don't, they'll probably be saying this about me too. We did get something, a gift, after the election. A man down in Texas heard Pat in the radio mention the fact that our two youngsters would like to have a dog. And believe it or not, the day before we left on this campaign trip, we got a message from the Union Station in Baltimore saying they had a package for us. We went down to get it. You know what it was? It was a little Cocker Spaniel dog in a crate that he'd sent all the way from Texas. Black and white, spotted. And our little girl, Tricia, the six-year-old, named it Checkers. And you know, the kids, like all kids, love the dog. And I just want to say this right now, that regardless of what they say about it, we're going to keep it.
The speech was a major success. Many Republicans voiced support for Nixon to stay on as Eisenhower's running mate. And Eisenhower agreed. A few weeks before the election, Eisenhower made a powerful speech. He talked about ending the war in Korea.
Now, where will a new administration begin? It will begin with its president taking a firm, simple resolution. That resolution will be to forego the diversions of politics and to concentrate on the job of ending the Korean War until that job is honorably done. That job requires a personal trip to Korea. Only in that way could I learn how best to serve the American people in the cause of peace. I shall go to Korea.
Adlai Stevenson also gave a powerful speech before the election. In it, he told of seeing an America where no man fears to think as he pleases or say what he thinks. An America where no man is another's master, where no man's mind is dark with fear. Adlai Stevenson spoke of a nation at peace with the world, an America as the horizon of human hopes. Americans voted in November. Eisenhower won almost 34 million votes. That was more than any other presidential candidate had ever received. Stevenson won about 27 million votes. Dwight Eisenhower was sworn in as America's 34th president in January of 1953. He was 62 years old. Many problems awaited the new Republican president. Republicans had only a small majority in Congress. Many of them were very conservative and unlikely to support many of Eisenhower's programs. The cost of living in America was rising. Senator Joseph McCarthy was still hunting communists, and the war was still being fought in Korea. But Ike had a lot of experience serving his country. Dwight Eisenhower came from a large family in Abilene, Kansas. They did not have much money. He received a free university education when he was appointed to attend the United States Military Academy at West Point in New York State. He remained in military service for many years. He was a top Army officer by the time the United States entered World War II in 1941. In June of 1944, he led the Allied D-Day invasion of Europe. In 1950, President Truman named him Supreme Commander of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. When Dwight Eisenhower ran for president, supporters shouted, "I like Ike." People liked him because he always seemed calm under pressure. As president, one of the first pressures he would have to deal with was the continuing war in Korea.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.